Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective, Christina Laurie, Jesse Bell, Isabella Garrido, Jaya Kumar, and Abyaz Karim. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. At their April 1st meeting, Council unanimously decided not to move forward with implementing a vacant home tax following a recommendation from city staff. Vacant homes exacerbate the limited housing inventory, contributing to rising prices and affordability challenges. A vacant home tax would impose fees on property owners of deemed vacant homes, with the goal of addressing these issues. Anne Lindsay with Public Sector Advisory Services at KPMG Canada briefed Council on the feasibility of the program. She described the reasoning behind implementing a vacant home tax.
Really, the two main drivers of a vacant home tax are the objectives to increase the housing supply and affordability. A vacant home tax targets residential properties that are unoccupied for an extended period of time. And that financial penalty placed on owners is meant to incentivize the owners to sell or rent those underutilized homes. And that would result in an increase in the overall housing supply by pushing those underutilized properties back onto the market. The other driver is to generate tax revenue, typically dedicated to affordability initiatives. So tax revenue generated from a vacant home tax could be reinvested into affordable housing initiatives, rental assistance programs, and homelessness prevention. But it is important to note that a vacant home tax should really be viewed as a temporary measure to address an immediate need of housing availability rather than a long-term revenue source. The long-term goal of the tax is really to motivate change in the behavior of property owners and eventually eliminate the need for the tax in the future when all homes are occupied.
Other Ontario municipalities have put similar taxes in place, including Ottawa, Toronto, Hamilton, Windsor, and Sault Ste. Marie. However, the tax is still relatively new to the province.
Other than Vancouver, who's had a vacant home tax since 2017, it is very new in Ontario. So Toronto was the first to implement in 2022. So we're really only 3 years into seeing what is happening in the Ontario market.
The City of Kingston originally started considering the tax in 2023. Lindsay's briefing outlined that implementation would either require property owners to self-declare their property as vacant, or the city would act on complaints from other people. The program would require substantial administrative resources to enforce compliance, including annual property status declarations from owners. The initial setup for a self-declaration-based system would cost between $535,000 and $995,000. With annual operational costs projected to be $250,000. A complaint-based system would be less expensive, requiring about $107,000 to set up and $77,000 annually to maintain. While the tax could theoretically generate revenue for affordable housing initiatives, the potential for tangible change in behavior among property owners remains uncertain. Lindsay also highlighted that annually only 2 to 7 additional properties might be put on the market as a result of the tax. The hefty costs and uncertainty surrounding the effectiveness of the program raised eyebrows amongst councillors, and ultimately led to the staff recommendation not to move forward. Kingston's circumstances have also changed significantly since this investigation began in 2023. While Kingston's vacancy rate in 2023 was only 0.8%, giving cause for the city to motivate property owners to sell unoccupied homes or make them available to be rented, Kingston's current vacancy rate is now 2.9%, which is above the provincial average of 2.7%. Councillor Don Amos asked Lindsay about how this impacts the recommendation.
In your opinion, is the 2.9% Kingston vacancy rate heading and trending in the right direction that potentially this vacancy tax is not really justified in moving forward with?
So typically, CMHC standards is that a 3% vacancy rate is considered healthy for communities. So my recommendation would align with CMHC's determination that an approximate 3% vacancy rate would be a healthy vacancy rate for the community.
Overall, it was unanimously agreed by council that the costs and uncertainties would outweigh the potential effectiveness of a vacant home tax. As Kingston continues to navigate its housing challenges, the city plans to explore alternative strategies that may prove more effective in increasing availability for affordable housing in the community. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Hello folks, I'm Abias from CFRC News and you're listening to our segment Campus Corner. Here we bring you the latest updates from Queen's Campus. This week on April 9th, we have an upcoming virtual talk by Dr. Christopher Gardner, More Consensual Than Controversy in Nutrition. It's part of the Healthy People, Healthy Planet speaker series. This event is hosted by Queen's University, explores the intersection of lifestyle interventions and planetary health, shedding light on how dietary choices impact both personal well-being and the environment around us. To dive deeper into the topic, I'll be speaking with Dr. Leslie Flynn, Dr. Suzanne Ascari, and Dr. Maria E. Theodoro, all experts in their fields of psychiatry, internal medicine, and lifestyle medicine. They will share insights on navigating nutrition controversies, the science behind sustainable dietary patterns, and the role of health communications in fostering lasting behavior change. Hello everyone, thanks for joining us in studio today. Let's get straight to the talk. I understand this event is a part of Healthy People, Healthy Planet speaker series. Can you tell us a bit about the series and why Dr. Chris Gardner was chosen for this session?
Sure, I'd love to answer that question. The Healthy People, Healthy Planet speaker series is an initiative of the Healthy People, Healthy Planet working group. This is from Queen's Health Sciences in the School of Medicine. This working group was established when the School of Medicine endorsed the Okanagan Charter. That's an international charter for health-promoting colleges and universities. Its calls to action include two things that are really important: embedding health into all aspects of campus culture and leading action in health promotion. So our working group, which is comprised of learners and physicians, asked, how can we promote health for people and the planet? So we have a passion for both lifestyle medicine and planetary health. And the purpose of this series is to raise consciousness and fill gaps in education surrounding these two critically important intersecting topics. I think for those who don't know lifestyle medicine, it's an area of medicine concerned with the prevention and reversal of chronic disease through lifestyle interventions such as nutrition, exercise, sleep. These are all evidence-based pillars. As healthcare providers, it's apparent to us that chronic disease is overwhelming our healthcare system with conditions like obesity and diabetes, heart disease, cancer, and dementia. And we know that at least partially the underlying cause is attributable to our lifestyle. So lifestyle medicine aims to treat the root cause of these illnesses rather than simply focusing on managing the illnesses. So back to our series, one of the key objectives of this series is to highlight how our lifestyle behaviors impact both human and planetary health, and how we all might make simple changes to improve both our personal and planetary well-being.
Right.
So to Dr. Chris Gardner, he was chosen for this series because he's a respected nutrition scientist. He's from Stanford University and he's worked for 30 years in this field. He studies a full range of dietary patterns, Mediterranean diet, plant-based diet, ketogenic diet, and he's actually demonstrated that dietary patterns have a huge impact on our health and well-being. His work is featured in a recent Netflix documentary series that you may be aware of, You Are What You Eat. It's a twin experiment.
Yeah.
If there's one person who can help us actually understand controversies in nutrition, it's Dr. Gardner.
Amazing. So the talk is called More Consensual Than Controversy in Nutrition. So why do you think nutrition is often seen as a controversial topic? And what are some of the biggest myths Dr. Gardner hopes to clear up?
Okay, Dr. Theodoro here. I think this is one of my favorite and juiciest topics. I get asked this all the time by patients. And as much as with much of the confusion and conflict in human discourse right now, most of the controversy surrounding nutrition is based on misinformation. We have, like, if you go on the internet, you'll see these wellness gurus on social media with little or no training in nutrition or formal training in nutrition, basing their recommendations on little to no evidence or cherry-picked evidence. And where this gets really confusing is when respected physicians and other healthcare providers are the sources of this misinformation. As our speakers will point out in the series, up until recently, traditional medical education involved no or little nutrition or lifestyle medicine training. And this is what we're trying to change, both via the series and one of the ultimate goals of our working group is to get this into the medical school curricula. And so who at the present can we turn to for reliable nutrition advice? As really with any topic, the reliable information or, you know, what we want to refer to as real facts comes both from the evidence and from our real experts who know how to interpret the evidence properly. And so for nutrition, that includes people like Dr. Chris Gardner, who have, you know, studied nutrition for their lifetime. These are the people who conduct human nutrition trials, like from controlled metabolic ward studies to the large epidemiologic studies, like the Nurses Health Study, and these are the people that know the nutrition best. We also turn to the evidence itself. And if you have, like I have, been studying the nutrition literature for years and years and years, you will slowly come to see that the overwhelming weight of nutrition evidence is remarkably consistent and reveals some key points that we can all agree upon, like processed and ultra-processed foods are harmful and should be minimized. A diet rich in whole plant foods confers many health benefits, both through the dietary fiber, the polyphenols, the micronutrients, and that saturated fat and excessive salt are harmful to human health. And generally speaking, that beverage of choice is water, with tea being another alternative. So I'll let it up to Dr. Gardner to address the big myths, but as you can imagine and have seen on the internet, this may include addressing the popularity of certain diet fads, such as the carnivore diet, that are not based in any credible human nutrition evidence and contrary to what we know with some certainty about nutrition and human health.
Right. So your answer actually leads me to my next question. So with so much conflicting nutrition advice online, what role does science communication play in helping people make better food choices?
Oh my gosh, communication is truly key. This is why we're doing this radio spot today. This is why we're doing this series. We want to get the message out that healthy nutrition and lifestyle choices are not as confusing and controversial as they're made out to be, and that with some simple changes, we can improve our personal health and the planet. Like I said, overwhelming weight of the medical evidence is clear, so we need to train our physicians to be our best communicators. Our healthcare providers in nutrition and lifestyle medicine, such that they are comfortable with providing clear and consistent messages about nutrition and lifestyle choices to their patients. And those patients in turn become the best advocates for a healthy lifestyle by leading through example. And so we have the opportunity here to celebrate our experts, and that's what we're doing with this series. And at every opportunity, give them a platform to help clear up the confusion.
Amazing. One of the key themes of this talk is the link between dietary choices and planetary health. Can you give our audience an example of a diet or even a simple change that they can implement to benefit both people and the planet?
Of course, this is Susanna Scarry. On this point, the evidence is clear. The food supply chain is responsible for approximately 25% of all human-generated greenhouse gas emissions, and uses about 70% of the planet's fresh water and 40% of the crop land. Animal-based food, particularly red meat, have relatively high environmental footprints per serving compared to other food groups. And the study that came out from the Lancet Commission 2019 also showed that if you want to compare a serving of red meat compared to a serving of lentils, is 160 times more compared to plant-based substitutes.
Wow.
Shifting to more plant-predominant dietary patterns results in major improvements in both human and planetary health. And this is well aligned with the 2019 Canada Food Guide, which promotes consuming a diet rich in plant-based foods like fruits, vegetables, whole grains, nuts and seeds, beans, lentils, and soy products, while also encouraging animal products. Also, a 2022 study by Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health showed that dietary patterns associated with better health outcomes and had lower greenhouse gas emissions, reduced nitrogen fertilizer use, and decreased land and water needs. So a diet that includes more plant-based, we are trying to emphasize this as much as we can, and fewer animal-sourced food is healthy, sustainable, and beneficial for both people and the planet. It's not all about all or not or nothing approach, but rather making small changes for a large positive impact. The bottom line is eat more plants and fewer animal products, particularly red meat. Food that is good for human health is also good for the planet.
That's an amazing way to put it. So circling back to the talk itself, what do you hope attendees take away from this talk and apply in their daily lives?
Sure. So I want attendees to understand the compelling evidence that poor diet is the leading cause of mortality globally, counted for more than a quarter of deaths, which is mostly related to chronic diseases that Dr. Flynn at the beginning mentioned. Those chronic diseases can be managed by lifestyle interventions, which also has huge burden in our human health and human care. My hope is that they will begin to view food through a different lens, recognizing the powerful connection between food, human health, and planetary health. People often have the impression that eating healthier is more expensive. However, a study by Oxford University published in Lancet Planetary Health compared the cost of a healthy planetary diet across 150 countries and found that in middle and high income countries, which Canada counts actually under high income countries, when considered the cost of the diet and or food, in particular, the cost of diet related illness and the diet related impacts on climate change, the cost is 24 to 34% cheaper than the current average diet, which is significant. As Dr. David Katz, our actually first speaker of this year, the Healthy People, Healthy Planet, said, knowledge is power when it comes to action, and we need to take action, and the time is now. I hope people will be inspired to make simple, manageable changes in their daily habits, such as adopting Meatless Monday. Even these small steps can have a significant positive impact on both personal health and the environment. For example, at Providence Care Hospital, we have offered Meatless Monday since Earth Day in 2024, and it has been successful since.
Amazing. So that brings me to my last question. It's a two-part question, actually. I understand Dr. Gardner's talk is just one part of the Healthy People, Healthy Planet speaker series, with four more sessions to follow. Can you share some highlights from the upcoming talks? And if our audience wants to sign up to this session, how can they do it?
Okay, excellent question. So we truly have an incredible speaker lineup this year. The next speaker is lifestyle medicine expert, Dr. Michael Clapper. He's been traveling across North America with a talk entitled, What I Wish I Learned in Medical School About Nutrition. However, for this series, he's going to speak about the mechanisms of disease reversal utilizing plant-based nutrition. And following that, we have the esteemed Dr. Neha Pathak. She's an expert physician editor at WebMD, who will be speaking on Earth Day about the intersection between lifestyle medicine and planetary health. And after that, we have Christy Gardner, Dr. Christy Gibson, A Canadian physician with expertise in trauma, author of the Trauma Toolkit. Her talk is entitled, What Does Your Body Already Know About Healing Stress? So she's into, you know, the whole toolkit for trauma, survival, and, you know, doing well. So we will end with a panel discussion of lifestyle medicine experts from across Canada discussing lifestyle medicine and how it's integrated into medical practice and education across Canada. So to answer your final question, to register, please go to our website. Just Google Healthy People, Healthy Planet at Queen's University, and it's the first thing that will come up. And CME points will be awarded to eligible healthcare professionals, and all are welcome to join. So we encourage everyone to share the registration link with family and friends.
Thank you. So that brings us to the very end of our segment. Thank you, everyone. Thanks for joining us in our studio today.
It's our pleasure.
Thank you so much.
And that wraps our conversation on More Consensual Than Controversy in Nutrition, part of the Healthy People, Healthy Mind speaker series. A big thanks to Dr. Leslie Flynn, Dr. Susan Ascari, and Dr. Maria E. Theodore for sharing their insights on the intersection of nutrition, health, and sustainability. I'm Abhias from CFRC News, and you were listening to our segment, Campus Corner. Stay tuned for more updates. Over to Isabella for sports after.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Monday, April 7th, we're going to see a daytime high of 5 degrees and sunny conditions, dropping down to minus 4 overnight with a 60% chance of precipitation. Tuesday, April 8th, daytime high of minus 2, dropping down to minus 7 overnight. We have a 30% chance for flurries during the day. Wednesday, April 9th, daytime high of 3 degrees and it will be sunny, dropping down to a crisp and cool minus 8 overnight. Thursday, April 10th, we're going to see a daytime high of 6 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud, dropping down to 0 overnight with a 30% chance of precipitation. Friday, April 11th, a little bit warmer, closer to what we saw over the weekend with a daytime high of 8 degrees and it will be cloudy, staying above 0 at 1 degree overnight. Saturday, April 12th, we're going to see a daytime high of 9 degrees, so staying in that consistent temperature range, and it will be cloudy, dropping down to 0 overnight. Sunday, April 13th, the first double-digit day of the week, daytime high of 10 degrees, dropping down to 3 overnight. And moving into the start of next week, Monday, April 14th, we're going to see a daytime high of 13, but there will be a 50% chance of precipitation and it will be dropping down to 5 degrees overnight. This is Jesse Bell with the City of Kingston Traffic Report for the week. Reminder that reduced load restrictions are in effect for Kingston as of March 1st. Heavy trucks and loads are restricted on city roads where posted. These restrictions help reduce the damage to roads in the spring. A complete list of roads with restrictions can be found in the Traffic Bylaw section of the City of Kingston website. Here are your road closures for the week. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess to 486 Albert is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Victoria Street between Union and Johnson is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Queen Street from Wellington Street to King is closed for the rerouting of hydro conduits by a Utilities Kingston contractor. Queen Street from Ontario to King Street East is closed for the dismantling and removal of the tower crane at 18 Queen Street, weather permitting. Berry Street from Queen to Colborne is closed for the demobilization of equipment from the 283 Queen Street site. The Hanson Memorial Parking Structure Restoration Project is underway. The work will take place throughout all levels of the building and will include efforts such as routine structural maintenance, repainting, replacement of waterproofing materials, and upgrades to the building's mechanical and electrical systems. The work is set to conclude in July of 2025. Here are some other delays you should be aware of. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club. Expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main for Utilities Kingston. Traffic will be reduced to one lane in each direction. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford. Expect delays beginning April 7th while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Montreal Street at John Counter. Expect delays for upgrades to the intersection including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage to improve safety and efficiency for all road users and accommodate increased traffic from the Wabin Crossing. Victoria Street and Earl Street to Union and Johnson. Expect delays beginning April 7th while a contractor mobilizes to start work on the second phase of reconstruction for sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Hello, I'm Henry, CFRC intern from the Queen's Department of History. Here's today's concert and events calendar. Starting with events, coming up on Monday, folks can head to the Kingston-Frontenac Public Library Central Branch, where folks can attend a free weekly drop-in craft and create session, run from 6 to 7:30 p.m. Loggers and Joggers Run Group also meets Monday at Fine Balance Brewing Company at 7 p.m. Also on Monday, both One Eye Jacks and The Brass will host their weekly free trivia nights starting at 7:45 and 8 p.m. respectively. On Tuesday, the Lululemon Weekly Fun Run meets at 270 Princess Street starting at 5:30. The Kingston Public Market runs at Springer Market Square from 8:30 to 4 p.m. Also on Tuesday, Euchre Night is happening at Daft Brewing from 7 to 9 p.m. After that, on Wednesday, One Eye Jats will host Board Game Night starting at 7. Both Something in the Water and Daft Brewing will host their free weekly trivia nights, both starting at 7 p.m. Folks can also head down to Musihi, which is hosting its weekly life drawing event. Don't forget to bring your own art supplies and $5 to participate in uninstructed life drawing. Thursday night will be the opening night for the Queen's Musical Theatre Club's sold-out run of Heathers the Musical at the Grand Theatre. This evening's performance starts at 7:30, with further performances continuing through the week up until the 17th. Also on Thursday, Daft will be hosting Drag Bingo from 7:30 to 10. The Out in Front Weekly Run Group will be hosting its usual weekly public run this Thursday, starting downtown at 6:15 p.m. in front of Runner's Choice. All people are invited regardless of ability, sex, sexual orientation, or gender identity. Folks can also head down to the Kingston Public Market, which is open from 8:30 to 4 p.m. in Springer Market Square. On Friday, the Grand Theatre, as part of their Grand Onstage series, will be presenting Africa en Cirque. This performance begins at 7:30 p.m. and has tickets available on the Grand's website for between $29.50 and $44.50. Also on Friday, the Spiral will be hosting the Girls' Night Out Improv Comedy Night featuring comedians Elvira Kurt, Janine Profeta, Diane Francis, and Karen Parker starting at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are available for $55.25 on the Kingston Grand's website. The Buckle and Daff Ruin will also be hosting their weekly free karaoke nights, doors open at 9. Next up, on Saturday, folks can head over to the Tet Center for their botanical market, which runs from 10 to 3 p.m. Folks can also head down to participate in Runner's Choice East End Run Group at 7:50 a.m. at the KNX Kingston Supermart, 29 Niagara Park. Also on Saturday, the Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. On Sunday morning, the Runner's Choice Long Run starts downtown outside their store at 8:20 a.m. All ages and paces are welcome. And finally, the Memorial Center Farmers Market will take place from 9 to 1 p.m. at Memorial Center. Have an event you would like to add to our online and on-air event calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. Again, I'm Henry, CFRC intern for the Department of History. We're continuing with today's concert and events calendar. For concerts, coming up first on Monday, the Kingston-based jazz and funk trio, the Morning Dubs, will be playing at Musihi from 8 to 11. Also on Monday, the club at the RCHA will host the Kingston Jazz Society's Jam, featuring Oscar Evans and Michael Broadhead from 4:30 to 6:30. There's a door charge of $5. After that, on Tuesday, the RCHA will also be hosting Tom's Tuesday Afternoon Happy Hour Jam from 4 to 7 p.m. Also, Musiki will host its weekly open mic starting at 8 and going till 11. On Wednesday, Whiskey Smoke will be playing at the Buckle from 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. Hotel Wolf Island will be holding its open mic night hosted by Mike Rapkins from 8:30 to 11:30. Also on Wednesday, Frank Ryan will be playing at Musiki from 8 to 11 p.m. On Thursday, the Toucan will be featuring three up-and-coming bands coming out of Queens: Purple Dye, Wait 'Em Out, and this evening's headliners, Last Call. Music starts at 9:30, goes till 1, and there is no cover charge. Also on Thursday, Trailer Swift Band will be playing at the Buckle from 8 to 11. Next up on Friday, Raoul and the Big Time will be playing at the RCHA from 8 to 11 p.m. Tickets for this performance are going for around $28 and are available online on Eventbrite. The Almonte-based rock and roll group Kentucky will be playing at Tiernanod from 7 to 9 p.m. Also on Friday, ESMO, Elizabeth Shepherd, and Michael Occupinti will be playing at Hotel Wolf Island from 7:30 to 9:30. Tickets for this evening's performance are available for $25 on Hotel Wolf Island's website. The Toucan also has three bands lined up for Friday night, with the Meringues, Dumb Crush, and Desert Island Big Band playing from 10:30 to 2 a.m. On Saturday, the Shitty Beatles will be performing at the Broom Factory, with their show starting at 7:30. Tickets are available for around $20 on Ticketscene. Also on Saturday, Ryan Zig and the Zags will be playing a free gig at the Buckle from 9 to 12:30. Folks can also catch the band Groove Infused at Tiernanog from 9 to 12. Also, folks can head to the Toucan to catch their three-band lineup, with bands Wygo, Isa Beister, and the Brightsides playing Saturday evening from 10:30 to 2 a.m. Also on Saturday, the Canadian children's music duo Nick Adams, Splash, and Taze Livett, Boots, will be performing at the Isabel Bader Center from 2:30 to 3:30 p.m. Tickets for this event are currently going for $20 and are available on the Isabel's website. The Kingston Grand Theatre will additionally be hosting the Kingston Symphony for this year's run of their Symphonic Speedruns concert, featuring world-class speedrunners from Cuphead and Celeste, accompanied by a live video game concert. This performance goes from 7:30 to 9 p.m., with tickets available for between $10 and $52 on the Kingston Grebs website, or in person at the Grand Theatre. On Sunday afternoon, Neil Carter will be performing Collection of Classics at Spearhead Brewery from 2 to 5, and later on, Savannah Shea will be playing at Musiki from 4:30 to 6:30. Have a concert you would like to add to our online and on-air concert calendar? Reach out today via cfrc.ca or at cfrcmusic on Instagram using the link tree in our bio.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.